supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
The active Kilauea volcano on Hawaii's Big Island is actively reminding residents and visitors of its ability to wreak havoc. Powerful volcanoes were much more prolific during Earth's and our solar system's earlier history. Let's go back in time and then look ahead with Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. Derek, let's start with a refresher. What causes a volcano?
Well, a volcano is caused by the internal actions within a planetary body in which you have hot magma, liquid rock essentially, able to flow around from one place to another. Our Earth has a molten core surrounded by an outer core and then a mantle and then the crust. Now, the inner core is where we have the actual liquid core, but the heat that is generated by the decomposition of radioactive minerals in the mantle causes the molten activity that we see in our crust. Because our crust is now moving around over cells of heat from the mantle, the plates that make up our crust are moved around, and at the boundaries of those plates we find volcanic activity.
Do all rocky planets have a similar composition?
Yes, they do have a similar composition. The mechanism is about the same, although, as it turns out, of the four rocky planets of the inner solar system, Earth is the only one that actually is still volcanically active. We can look at the other planets and see that in their past history, they too have been volcanically active. In fact, the largest volcano in the solar system has been known to be Olympus Mons on Mars, Mount Olympus on Mars. But if we look around, we can certainly easily see that Venus at one time had a tremendous amount of volcanic activity, perhaps not too long ago, as recently as maybe 2.5 million years ago. And we know that's probably the case for Mercury as well.
So is Earth the only entity in our solar system that still has active volcanoes?
No, not at all. In fact, there are still active volcanoes at some of the moons of the outer planets of our solar system. So we look at Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune. These gas giants, as we call them, actually have very, very, very cold atmospheres, hundreds of degrees below zero. So you would assume that there isn't any activity there. But if you look at the moons, there is tidal activity between the giant planets themselves and the rest of the moons of a planetary system that cause the interiors of the moons to have a liquid magma-like substance. And probably the best-known case in point is the moon of Jupiter, known as Io. In fact, some observations suggest that the moon itself gets completely resurfaced once every few million years. There's so much volcanic activity on Io.
Derek, so much in the news of the advent of private ventures in accelerating our space program, and that model is being adopted to varying degrees by other countries as well.
And most surprisingly, by China, a place that we might not have thought would adopt similar plans to other space agencies from around the world. Most recently, at a Chinese space conference, the news agency China Daily reports that China is really planning to develop space stations, lunar and Martian exploration capability, but most surprisingly, reusable first-stage rocket boosters, very much like SpaceX has demonstrated here in the United States over the last several years.
An interesting amalgam from a communist country.
I would say so. What I find most surprising about China's plans is that they also plan to provide commercial launch services for clients worldwide, as well as developing the capability for private space tourism to be able to take place as well.
Check with your travel agent for updated rates.
There could be a cheap way to get to space sooner than we expect.
Derek, we have a moment left with clear skies. What's available to be seen in the night sky this week?
So now we're at this really wonderful period when the planets have taken over both the morning sky and the evening sky. We've spoken about Jupiter, Mars, and Saturn in the pre-dawn sky for several months now, actually. But Jupiter's beginning to make its move over into the evening sky. It does so because as the Earth passes between the Sun and Jupiter on our course around the Sun, we come to this interesting point when all three line up. We call this point opposition. This is when an object in the sky, in terms of a planet, is directly opposite the Earth and the Sun. So we have the Sun on one side. We have the object on the direct opposite side of the Earth. What this means is that Jupiter rises right as the Sun sets and sets again as sunrise. And so we have Jupiter up all night long. It's a really, really great time to observe this particular planet, the largest that we can see in the evening sky. But it's joined by the brightest planet in the evening sky, Venus, at its nearly full phase, what you would call gibbous, because of its position relative to the Sun. Right now, it's at the almost the highest point of its orbit, the most distant point from Earth. It's now about 133 million miles away from Earth. Its average distance is 25 million, maximum is 162 million. And right now, with a small telescope, you'd be able to see that without much difficulty at all. So this is the perfect time to get your telescope tuned up so you can see these great and wonderful features. June 2nd of this year, the Franklin Institute's running a workshop on a Saturday morning at 9:30 in which we'll help you understand how your telescope works, refresh your memory about how to use it, and help you understand enough about the night sky that you'll be able to get your telescope out and use it to observe these wonderful planets that are available this season.
Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dave.
Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on NewsWorks Tonight.